Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. I don't know what the heck is going on. But I'm on my phone instead of the regular setup. How's everybody doing?
Good evening, Don.
Good.
Good. If we get kicked off, it's because of the storm.
Yeah.
And we having one right now.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, it just came through here.
Did it?
Oh, good evening, Adrian.
Hi. Yeah, it was, woo. I was watching these trees.
Oh, that good, huh?
The trees were waving hard.
Well, if that's the case, we'll probably get knocked off.
Yeah, but they stopped. Down this way, they, you know, settled down. It's just a little wind blowing out there now. Not much. But before, it looked like it was maybe about 65 miles an hour.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It settled
seemed
down.
Like every time it burps around here and we lose power.
The only power we lost was the cable.
Uh-oh.
And it came right back.
Oh, well,
wow.
That's good.
Yeah, normally, you know.
Well,
you had
I didn't get to watch Gunsmoke. Somebody's going to play hell. Get some.
Yeah.
All right.
You all are with consumers?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. You got TCE, don't you?
Yeah, well, they're just as bad. It don't matter.
That's it.
Now, at 8 o'clock tonight,
I have a utility worker living in the house with us. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That works.
No, it doesn't. Not really, but I haven't heard normally, you know, they'll say all hands on deck and they'll call people in. I haven't, she hasn't
yeah.
come down and say, hey, I got to go to work. But she
well,
works from home. Half the time she works from home, half the time she's in the office. So.
Well, that's the way to go. That's a good way. Tonight at 8 o'clock, we're going to have two guests come on and talk about Convention of States. So I hope you all stay around for that. It's very interesting. Everybody complains about what can we do. We want term limits. We want this. We want to say so in our education and all this. Well, this is a good way to do it without bloodshed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If we want, term limits, this might be the way to go. I'd like to see Mitch McConnell put back in Kentucky. How about you? I would.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think Adrian's getting a little wet there with sweat.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see a bunch of them go.
Oh, yeah.
They need to. It's time. Our system was not supposed to be that you be there 30 years. This is not a 30-year contract.
No.
And these people that are getting in, they stay in office so long, and it doesn't seem that they change. They stick with a lot of the old. It's nothing wrong with being old. It isn't in some of our thinking. But you have to also give younger people a chance. But, you know, that's scary, too. It's all really scary.
You got that right.
I always just say to people, it's okay if you want to support a party. I have no problems with you doing that. That's your choice. But please, please, research these people. Because they're not, you know, you can't just be for a party and then just go vote because these people are in a party. Look and see what's happening to our society. And that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm off of that.
Yeah, we'll save that for the 8 o'clock hour.
Yeah, we would say that for 8. But it's almost like our UAW. You know, if you look at our union or our organization, is the way I should put it, it's so political.
Yes,
and when
it is.
It gets to be, when it gets to be more about politics, they don't care about the people.
No.
That's the sad part. And that is what we're supposed to be about, the members.
Once they get in power, and like the UAW, they stay there till they retire.
Yeah.
And there's a reason. It's called money.
Yeah.
We found the last few presidents have gotten themselves in a predicament of some sort, usually around financials. And if you look at Congress people, they come in, some of them are average Joe Blows like us.
Right.
And in a couple of years, they're millionaires. What happened?
Did you say a couple of years?
Yeah, some a year. Some a year, you're right, some a year.
I've been taking a look at that, and I'm looking at right now, I don't know exactly how much our president makes at the top of the UAW.
Yeah, I don't either.
I have one person that's saying that they make $350,000. And
damn.
It's like, for what?
I think his annual salary, he got bumped up a couple of times. I think it's the Constitution. I think, isn't it, $165,000 or $175,000 maybe? I won't say
$165,000. It's more than that.
Wow.
Because in 2018, he got a 31% raise.
Right.
The president did. I think, I can't exactly remember if they made 125, 130, look, I don't know why that 134,000 is hitting my head. They were making 134,000, somewhere around there, before the 31% raise.
Right.
And so after the 31% raise, it went up, and I don't want to give a figure because I'm not exactly sure.
Right, right.
But then they got another raise.
Right.
Wasn't it before the convention? This last convention?
I think it might have been.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been.
So I would say that they, at least for a base pay, is making $200,000 plus.
Yeah.
Okay, and that doesn't include payments from different boards that they sit on.
Right.
I don't know. No, I haven't really been digging into that as to looking at all of the things that's going on here recently. You know, the click on Detroit today, Channel 4, where our president, Mr. Fain, was on Click on Detroit for 15 minutes. And he talked. I'm not going to really go into that. We did post that. Several of us posted it in different groups so that people could watch it. Sometimes, though, we have to be careful with some of the things that we say that can be quoted. We're about to enter, if they haven't already, they've really already kind of entered into negotiations. You have to be careful with some of the rhetoric. But irregardless, we'll see how that works out. You know, about 3 weeks ago, I'm sorry to change the subject, I said that I was going to check on In Progressive and Below when they got ready to separate from the company, say after 30 years, and I was talking about life insurance, and they do not have life insurance. No one ever talks about that. They talk about, oh, we won't have medical. No, but you won't have life insurance either. And I checked on that to make sure, and that's what I was told. No, they won't have life insurance. My suggestion, especially to the young people, go and get a life insurance policy. You don't have to have a large one. Just make sure you got enough where your family can bury you, cremate you, whatever they're going to do. You know, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000 policy. I wouldn't tell you to go over $10,000. But get a policy, and I recommend, don't get a term policy. Get a whole life insurance policy. So that, you know, I don't like to see GoFundMe accounts. I feel like you should be able to take care, your family should be able to take care of you. But sometimes, you know, that doesn't happen. But you still need to know that. And that needs to be fought for, along with having medical after 30 years. That all of these benefits need to come back.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, is there any other benefits that we are ignoring, or not so much ignoring, just forgot about, that they don't, you know, the current members In Progression and Below do not have? Just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you forget about things until you need it.
Right. Exactly.
For the life insurance plan, outside of the UAW and being an active worker, the majority of banks, specifically credit unions, will usually offer in partnership with an insurance company to offer a benefit for members. Matter of fact, with my credit union, I never fill it out. I don't. I have my family covered while I'm active, outside of what the employer pays for. Because what the employer pays for is exactly what you said. It's enough to take care of business. I have an awkward sense of humor that I'll keep between my wife and I. I'm close about the insurance policies, but the one by the employer, there's nothing to write home to mom about, but it does take care of essentials. Not only that, but as an active worker, in progression or not, I have my family covered. I have my children covered. I also have them covered for long-term disability and dismemberment insurance. I'm not waiting to fight with an auto insurance or a homeowner's insurance. If I have it covered within an enhanced plan that the company already covers, I know I'm good at that point. But as far as life insurance, the plans that I've seen through various banks, I would say they're comparable throughout, you know. Definitely not maybe as less expensive as doing it through your employer, who's already paying for coverage. But even post-retirement, and I know that my grandparents, very sad, my grandfather died in about 3 months before he died because they had been retired and they were older. They ended up having, I think, term life, but that term came up just 3 months before my grandfather died, and the increase of pay for the insurance went so high that they had to cut it down to almost nothing, and then 3 months later he died. You know, so it was just enough to take care of funeral expenses, and that was it. But so I agree with you, Adrian. It's very important to have those things set up. And another thing to go along with life insurance, whether you're active worker or you're retired, if you have life insurance and you are an auto worker, with us having legal services now, that's a negotiated benefit. It's not guaranteed in the next negotiations. We lost it in 15, got it back in 19. If you have life insurance, that is considered an asset. You need to use legal services, get a will. I know Michigan's not a holding state for a will, but the will, according to legal services, because I've done one with my wife, a will is legal so long as it's signed. And with legal services, you call legal services, and you set up an appointment with a lawyer. You go over all the questions and answers with them. They type it up. They email it to you. I don't know if they'll fax it, but they'll email it to you to make sure that everything's correct. If it's not, they'll fix it. If it is, good. Then you can print it out, and you'll have a third-party witness that's not in the will. And then you have to keep that in a safe place. And I do recommend it because life insurance is considered an asset. And, you know, if you can keep things out of probate court for your loved ones in the event that something happens to you, the better.
That's right.
But, like, through my bank, I actually have a it's not even worth a deductible, honestly, but I have automatic coverage of a certain amount just by being a member. They just send you notification to update your beneficiary for it. I never fill it out. It's pretty much, it's a joint bank account, so we're both members. Either of us will have access to it. So, yeah.
Hey, Jess?
Yeah.
Not always is life insurance considered an asset. I went through that with the death of my father. If there's a beneficiary, they are the sole person of that.
That's correct.
Oh, that's correct.
That if let's say for example I'm your dad, and you are my son and Adrian's my daughter. If I name Adrian as the recipient, my beneficiary for my life insurance policy, that's not an asset. It goes directly to Adrian. And if she was nice enough to give you some, she could, but she doesn't have to because she was the sole beneficiary on that will for the benefit for the life insurance policy.
You are correct.
It doesn't
also,
go through probate.
They do allow for contingent.
That doesn't go through probate.
Right, correct.
Life insurance.
If you don't.
And usually the credit union is usually accidental death only. Usually. Just saying.
They used to have $1,000 policy that they gave to each one of their members. If I'm not mistaken.
Very important. Yeah, it's an important thing to have, like you said, at least a $10,000 policy to cover the cost so that you're not stressing everybody else on how they're going to pay for some. A lot of people nowadays prefer to be cremated, which is a lot less than being, put in a coffin. Because you're in a coffin in Michigan, you have to also have a crypt. So you get a big cement crypt, and then the coffin gets lifted down in the crypt. So, anyway.
Otherwise known as a vault.
A vault. Crypt.
For those
yes.
who don't know the difference, you know, they're the same, a crypt and a vault.
Let me
right.
get 313 on real quick. We got a lot of people in the switchboard. If you'd like to join the conversation, please push one on your keypad. There's about 40.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you doing tonight?
Trying to stay dry. It's raining like a dog out there.
Uh-oh.
Yes, it is.
Has the wind died down out there yet?
Yeah. No wind where I'm at, just thunder in the distance and a little very light rain at the current moment, but thunder in the distance.
Okay. Yeah, I know that's only like 35, 40 miles from where I live, that truck plant that and then where you're living is about the same amount of distance. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering
if the winds pick up
already.
We had some heavy rain, a little bit of wind, and then the wind died down, and now it's light rain at the moment. Mm-hmm. If the wind picks up, I'm putting my waders on. I ain't trying to blow away.
You'll need
somebody's got to work in the household.
I'm going to get Jimmy on. Jimmy, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jim.
How's that finger?
We lost him already?
I don't know. He's still on. We just don't hear him. That's all.
Oh.
He muted himself, I guess.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I said I want to give Jesse a couple cannonballs. That's what I use for fishing, Jesse. They're 12-pound anchors. They'll hold you down.
He said they'll hold you down.
It got to be better than nothing.
Just remember, son, if you're out there in Lake Huron and you hit bottom, come west. Go east, you got a long way to go.
You were muted there, Jimmy. I think you were using your other finger.
This one's awful big, you know. I mean, 9 7/8, 3 points in.
For
any of you people don't know, I decided to put my finger in between a trailer hitch and a trailer hitch ball at the perfect time that the jack stand decided to collapse. I lost an inch and a half of my middle finger, so if you see some guy running around flipping not people off with a stump, there's a good possibility it's me.
That's the wrong finger to lose.
Hey, they're doing them antimens anyway. I might as well shorten it up. Everything's abbreviated, you know. Take a stump. Bitch can't write me up. What did he do? He split me the stump.
Right.
So what's going on, man? Because I'm listening to Adrian and about the benefits that we've given up that we forgot about. Well, like, yeah, if you go all the way back to the 79 agreement, hell, you got 13 additional holidays through the life of the contract, which one is supposed to include your birthday every year, people. Do you remember that one?
Yes. Yeah,
now,
they gave
so
that
much
one up, too.
Oh, yeah, that was, remember, they gave that up a year after we got it. Mm. Yeah, I mean, because they come out and said, we got that contract in 79, and I think they opened it up in 80 or 81 after the Scott would have to verify it, or you, the Warren memo letter leaked by, believe it or not, it turned out it was leaked by Jokic. You know, he used that to win the presidency. He leaked that out, and that's how he beat Eastland in that bullshit politics. That's how we wound up with what I'm going to call the administration caucus.
Right.
You know what I've noticed here most recently in the newspapers? They're referring to the administration caucus. All of a sudden, they don't say administration caucus. They say Ruther caucus. They are not
the
Ruther
caucus.
No,
thank you. I've saw that in two write-ups lately that it's caught my attention. Why are we going back to the Ruther caucus? He ain't been around for God.
And Ruther wouldn't have done the half the crap that they did.
That's a fact.
He wouldn't have allowed this.
I'll guarantee you one thing, he wouldn't have gave a goddamn thing up.
No, all that fighting that they did to get that?
Yeah, that's on me. I mean, you know, there's no way Walter or Vic. I mean, they said, you know, they still say Vic didn't have half the brains of Walter. I don't know. I've met Vic. I never met Walter. But they were both, in that case, in my logic, they were both pretty smarter than me and that shit.
Yeah, they knew what to go for, and they fought, and they got the members to back them up and fight for this stuff. And, you know, I just, it's just heartbreaking that everything that they fought for was given back to the companies.
What's sad is then when the company, you know, like I said, when they said they were going bankrupt and all that shit because of, again, his poor management calls. Remember, people, we're given the cheapest part to build a world-class vehicle. I mean, we're not taking the best of the best and the cream of the crop here, believe me. And,
yep.
We're doing that consistently. We're making them billions with a B, or in some cases maybe even trillions if you get to write off the tax write-offs, and they won't give shit back to their own employees. I mean, it's pretty sad. Before, at least we were rewarded. You know, everybody knew we were going to wear our bodies out, but we had 30 and out. Hell, there is no such thing as 30 and out, and if there is, you got the Social Security carve-out, which I'm losing real quick here in another month, so that means I'm going to lose 100 and, what is it, Don, 200 and some bucks a month?
Huh?
About apps. You know,
oh, we don't have to talk about that. I don't know about that part.
I'm actually getting bored.
Well, yeah, but where I'm going with this is Don, myself, and I believe you, Adrian, and Scott, our Social Security age is 65. The younger generation people there, hell, my kids are up in the mid-70s.
I think it's 62 for me.
It's 62, yeah, you collected 62, but 67 was full Social Security for at least Don and myself.
Yeah.
Remember, Reagan went in there and he did some stuff, and we should have been like them people over there in Europe, over in France, that said, we're not going to let you raise our Social Security age. We should have been protesting.
You're right.
But we didn't. We just said that.
Yeah, mine
is
my card. 55.
Yeah,
keep going up on this damn thing, man. But pretty soon you'd be 80 years old
to get your own
you
Social Security.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, Don. My daughter was born in 89, and Amanda tells me she's got to be 78
to get full Social Security
to qualify for full. She at 72, she can will be the first time she qualify for Social Security, but it's at a reduced rate like it was for me if I went out at 62. But
right,
if I had wanted to wait until the end and get full Social Security, I think it was 66.8.
Something like that. Mm-hmm.
Damn.
They had different years that if you were born in, I think if you were born like 51, let me see, it might have went all the way up to 54, where you still qualified at 65 for full. And then after that, that's when they start playing with the years and stuff. But
yeah, that's
still,
when they started borrowing the money from it and never paying it back.
Mm.
None of that shit would have happened if they wouldn't have screwed with it, and I'm talking about the political people.
You know,
we'd be
all right if we got a full pension and our Social Security.
Right.
That would make a big difference for a lot of people.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because I'm going to say this right now. I couldn't survive just on Social Security.
Oh, no. Hell,
I need my pension, and I want my brothers and sisters to have that same damn pension, that same damn right. I personally think we need pensions back for everybody, because when the union UAW gave up pensions in the bankruptcy, that changed the pension plan across the United States, even in the private sector.
Right. Yep.
The reduced pension when...
Go ahead, Jesse.
I was going to say the reduced pension based on qualifying for Social Security is a concession, just like getting subpay equal to a certain percentage of your hourly pay based on what you get from unemployment. It's still a concession. It should just be set no matter what. The benefit is the benefit. To me, the way I see that, these types of benefits and that they get reduced based on something that's in common. It's something that the employer pays into, something you pay into, that you earn, and then the companies are allowed to back off of paying you your benefit based on something that you receive from the government.
Yes, we're talking about the life insurances. And I don't know if you're – Jesse, you know they buy a life insurance policy on you immediately, right?
That's right.
Now, say they buy a life insurance for Jimmy, and Jimmy quits after 2 years. They keep that life insurance, and they get a maturity rate back on it. I was shocked to find that out.
Go ahead, baby.
Yeah, and, you know, that I was thinking about, I couldn't go in depth with anyone when I was asking about the life insurance, because I'm quite sure no one probably would be able to tell me on the UAW side. And I don't have company contacts where I can talk to somebody on the company side that would tell, you know, would give you that information. But
I think 303 was trying to say something before I ended up talking last.
Oh, didn't hear him.
Didn't say a word.
Oh,
okay. Sorry.
If I did, it would be something about Don and being old and, I don't know, those blue bells and shit.
That's my
I'll say something. So, but, like, we're trying to stay out of rumors here. We all know that shit about couch, so we don't talk about that. We try not to gossip too much.
Hearsay. Hearsay, I tell you. It's hearsay.
What did you all think about Judge Lawson telling Neil Barofsky that he has to give him details on the election?
That was wonderful.
I thought it was too. But I was wondering what hair got up his butt to make him do that. Because, I mean, these were questions, you know, that...
I have a great idea. I won't say off the as to why that happened. I just won't be saying that on the air.
But
I'm not trying to get a phone call from anybody that never cared to call me before. How about that?
I got you.
I was quite pleased that he's asking him for more information. And I still don't understand how you make something official. All the protests and appeals are not completed.
I think that's going to come out here, too.
And I think
if we know that.
It might be part of why the judge has asked for these details.
Right.
And Ms. Perry, I think that's you. You're on.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
What's up, Carrie?
Hey, what about... Hi, honey. What about that attorney for the UAW?
Abigail?
Her
being fired.
Yeah,
that's on my list, too. I made a list this time.
Yep. I didn't. I scrapped it myself. A lot's taken place in the last couple of weeks.
I got a question to ask you guys. Have you guys heard, are they up in Black Lake this week coming up?
I thought LaShawn was
no
there.
No clue, Jim. Yeah, no clue. There's a lot going on because summer, you know that. There's a lot of different conferences going on up there.
I think they're still recovering from Vegas.
No, I meant the big boys because we were supposed to have a little meeting with Sean and the team, and all of a sudden we've been told they're all up in Black Lake all week. So I was just wondering. I hadn't heard that. And then, like I said, how plans change. So we changed our plans, too. So we got our court date, Sean, so you know that. Okay, bud? Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. You try and talk to him, fine. He don't want to talk, we'll drag his ass into court.
Well, getting back to him firing the general counsel, it's not making a whole lot of sense. The quote that I wrote down, he said that info was being concealed from him until very recently. And it's like, what information, I mean, what was being concealed from him? He just got in office. So did
so
he?
So you talking about Borowski? You talking about Borowski?
No, Abigail Carter.
Okay.
Abigail
the
Carter.
The general counsel.
It was a general counsel that he fired. And, you know, in one article, there was no comment about it, but in the article in the Free Press, his comment was that information was being concealed from him until very recently. So it's like,
it almost
sounds
like concealed information to hold you at bay, almost like a blackmail. That's what it appears to me to sound like.
Well, Ms. Carter has the opportunity to claim client privilege.
Right.
With people who've left. I don't know how that would work because if you're lead counsel for our organization, that kind of puts her in a hard spot because client attorney privilege is one thing. But when you're the lead counsel for the organization, you can only go so far with that. Something has to come out. You can't get that out with going to trial, having a jury.
the only way you can get that information out in which you cannot plead the fifth, I believe, is a grand jury. And I don't see that happening, but you never know. You never know.
I get what you're saying, Scott. I get what you're saying. But lead counsel for an organization is not a private counsel to an individual, though, especially when we're all paying for that counsel. So I don't know where client privilege would come into that, but I'm not a legal person. But I would put that in question.
If you and I ask a legal question, I learned this from Dick Dangin. They answer your question with a letter. If you have another question, they have to answer it. If there's a statement, they always, Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, they always have to have the last statement on whatever legal question you're asking. Well, what I'm thinking is, in my line of thought is, they're not just the lawyer for our organization, the UAW. They're also counsel for the staff. They let them know what they can do and what they can't do. They let them know about the contracts. They look over the union bylaws from all the different locals and regions. They look over all this stuff that's legal. So I'm saying is they're also an attorney for the staff there. You know what I'm saying? So it's like wearing two coats.
Well, they might be wearing more than that because don't forget you have FBI involvement.
True.
You've got state court
and
involvement.
In, right?
See, so maybe information he thought he was supposed to get, she couldn't give until she got permission.
Right.
I mean, I don't know, because I don't know what it is that he, you know, didn't find out until very recently. And
well, must have been very good if he got fired over it.
Another
well,
question I got is, anybody ever found out whose
right.
names are on the? Has anybody found out whose names are on the indictments?
Which indictments,
no.
Jimmy?
The open indictments. I've been trying under the Freedom of Information Act. I mean, according to them, what was it? Last I knew, I think there was now 20 or 19 open indictments still.
Oh, those investigations.
Right. We need to know that information, too, because if it turns out we voted for some of them people, which I believe we did, you know, there's got to be some recourse for that, does there not, Brother Fain? Somebody held back a lot of cookie. If you can name the President of the United States and indict him and bring his name out, or the ex-president for that matter, or a previous president, or an asshole, and you can't bring out people in the UAW union, something's wrong here, people. Something smells like shit in our union.
And we're talking about the fourth report. There has been no follow-up to that report. That's the one that had the 19 investigations in it.
Right, but then the newspaper, did you see in the newspaper the lady said they finished it up with their sixth report? I can't find a fifth or a sixth report when I try and look.
The fifth report, the sixth report, has nothing in it but election numbers.
Yeah, general election was the fifth, and the sixth report was the
right.
runoff, and then the seventh was that it was
this
certified.
This is the seventh. Is the one that he says
yeah.
is official now.
Well, something tells me Judge Lawson's going to change that.
Yeah, Judge Lawson.
The eighth report might be a new monitor. I'm just saying.
Yeah, we don't know what's happening here because, like I said, there's no follow-up to that fourth report.
Let's be real about this. If you haven't, I don't know how much anybody's read about our monitor prior to being chosen as our monitor.
Mm-hmm.
one of the reasons, one of the staple reasons that it was said that he was chosen was because he actually created the monitorship division within his law firm, and according to his portfolio, was successful in doing monitorship on larger, high-profile scale. Therefore, that was one of the main reasons that he was chosen.
And it should be noted,
he actually created it.
Well, Jesse, put it out there that this was all in the benefit of a management side of the debate, or of the monitorship, or whatever the hell you want to call it.
Yeah, supposedly.
He's represented General Motors how many different times?
That's what I was getting ready to say. Supposedly, he's represented GM. And it's like, okay, well, why was he chosen as a monitor when GM is one of the companies that we're affiliated with?
Yeah, he didn't have clean hands.
No.
Conflict of interest.
Yes.
In their world, in Black's world law book, they call it clean hands, because when your grievance is supposed to pass from one to another, it's supposed to go to somebody that's got clean hands, that's never had anything to do with that case when it's brought for them. So you got clear eyes. That's why I call it clean hands.
Right.
But, that's where third step came from in the GM grievance. I don't know if you guys have the same four steps we have.
Couldn't tell you.
I'll just say there's plenty not to say on air.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. And at 8 o'clock, don't forget, we have a special extra show about the convention of state. So hang on with us if you are interested.
What is it?
Convention of State. You know, they're going to tell us how we can take control over our government like we were supposed to. So it's very interesting. So stick around for that. But, Jimmy, I got something special for you. And I want
all right,
you to
I don't
want to
get no. I ain't getting in no submarine, Don.
I know that's right.
Yeah, you got that right, buddy. I wouldn't put you in one. Besides, you and me wouldn't fit in it. So we're the
oh, my God.
Here we go, Jimmy. See if you recognize any of this. If it plays.
Yeah, that.
Come on.
I can hear him now. I'm going to whip somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guys hear anything?
Nope.
Hear anything such as what?
They don't like me. Let's try it this way.
Aww. You know they love you.
They don't like me at all. If you guys can't hear this.
We can't hear nothing.
Don't say anything. It's playing through my headphones. Anyway, it goes back 17.7 years ago. I got the original first show that Dick Danjen called in on. And it's
oh my God.
17. Oh, I got to look again. Broadcast and worked 17.7 months ago. Or, yeah, 17.7. That's it.
Wow.
So, I mean, think about it, though. We were talking, we're getting a little off here, but if we just stuck together, like with Jesse and the younger generation of my brothers and sisters coming forward, and keep them notified what's going on and what we've given. But think about that. If you got your birthday off every year of a three-year agreement, for the 3 years of the agreement. Remember, all our agreements back then were 3 years, and I think we should go back to a three-year agreement because of the way the economy, but that's my humble opinion there, so I think that should go to a vote, but I don't think we should ever go past four.
I think, Jimmy, they took that away from us in a recession. We had our birthday – And Roger Smith was the president of the
They took that away in 81 when they opened up the contract, because if you remember right, they told us if we didn't give that shit up, that we'd get laid off, so we gave it up, and then 3 weeks later, I got laid off.
I was already laid off. So,
I know, but I'm just telling you what they did to us down in Detroit.
I went to the Union Hall, and I said, well, you better vote yes, or you'll never get back in. I said, no, I was told by my dad you never vote yes on concessions, period, and I voted no.
You know, one thing I can't figure out, Don, is when you guys were really getting hammered in 79 and 80 over there and laid off, there was people from Metal Fab that were coming to Metal Fab, getting in a bus and riding all the way over to Lansing. They'd work 6 hours over there, and then they'd get back on that bus and ride back. Them people with 76, 78, and 79 seniority in Metal Fab never got laid off. I don't know how the hell they ever did that one.
Wow.
Wow.
I never heard of that.
Well,
know,
no, I didn't either until, what was it, 2007. One of my friends started talking about the days. He goes, man, remember when we used to have to get here early to catch the bus? He goes, that was cool, making them pay for the gas all the way to Lansing. I go, what the fuck are you talking about? He goes, well, when everybody else got laid off, we got to go over to Oldsmobile and work over there.
I worked at Oldsmobile when we shut down the truck plant to build the van, and I worked over there in Oldsmobile right before it shut down. They gave me a nice book.
But I mean, they never lost any seniority. I mean, think about it. 78, 76, 70, they all 76, 77, and 78, and early 79 Metal Fab people never had a break in their seniority.
Damn. Well, I didn't get a break, but I was damn close. I was real close.
You got a break of some kind. You lost retirement credits. You just didn't break seniority.
Well,
because once you got on subpay, you don't get a full credited year in your pension credits for that.
Oh, subpay sucked.
Yeah, I know.
Nobody told me. I was working under the table as a disc jockey, and like I was before I got in General Motors. Anyway, I was working and I was saving my credits. You know, I had 52. I didn't need them. I decided to go ahead and get them one day. I was going to buy a new mixer or something. I was going to buy something musical. I don't know what it was now. And I went and I got 5.2. Nobody told me if you wait and the longer the layoff is, the more credits they take. I didn't know that. So I got 5.2 checks. That's all I got. Yeah.
And you were supposed to get a year. What was it? You were supposed to get a year. I got 6 week checks. I got 6 weeks of sub checks, and they said I had a full year's credit. But like you said, when you took a thing, instead of taking two credits away, they take like 14 or some shit.
Yeah, they took 10 from me. 10.
Wow.
So I hosed myself. Oh, boy, did I hose myself. Yeah. Nobody told me.
Me neither, Don. I got 6 weeks of subpay, and it was exhausting. So I thought I had a full year. She goes, oh, no. Every subpay check, because there's so many people laid off, this amount comes out of your thing. I go, really?
Yeah. And I went to the Union Hall. I said, why didn't you tell people this? Because I wasn't the only one that got hosed. And they said, and I said, by the way, we gave all these concessions. Aren't I supposed to be back to work? Isn't that what Roger Smith said? I forgot who in the hell the president was. And I remember Gettlefinger on our TV at General Motors Truck and Bus saying, if you vote for this concession, you will get them all back once the company starts making a profit. Everything we gave up, we were supposed to get back. What a bunch of bullshit.
That was Stephen P. Jokic.
No, that was Gettelfinger.
Gettelfinger was
I thought it was Jokic. No. Said we'd get it all back.
No, it was Gettelfinger up on my screen saying we'll get it all back. Then him was Jokic.
No, Jokic was first.
Okay. Wasn't it Gettelfinger, Scotty, said that? Yeah.
In 2009. Yeah, they're cutting coal back. As soon as the factory gets better, we'll get our stuff back. It went Owen Bieber, Jokic, then Gettelfinger, then King, Williams, Campbell, and Payne now.
Yeah.
Oh, you forgot Jones.
You
forget about jumping Jerry Jones.
And Jones was after Williams.
And don't forget what Gettelfinger said. He's taking us out for job security. 3 days later, he says, "We have a VBA."
Think about. I was thinking about how they even increased our out-of-pocket costs at Ford's, and I don't know if they did it at the other two, but they came around and, we're going to take a vote. They're going to increase your out-of-pocket costs. Do you want the active workers to take that, or are you going to put that on the retirees? And, I remember running around the building talking to everybody. Please don't put that on the retirees. The retirees are on a fixed income. You know, we get overtime. We can make up that money. What did the active workers do? Oh, no, we don't want that on us. Put it on the retirees.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share something, too, because I know we're getting to switch gears here in a few minutes, Don. But, I was able to participate in the Detroit branch NAACP 60th anniversary Freedom Walk for Martin Luther King this weekend. And they spread it out over a four-day period, but the walk was actually on Saturday. And it was great to see so many people. I tried doing my first Facebook Live. I suck at it. But I did it anyway to allow people to allow all of us to share some part of that experience that may or may have not been able to go there. And it was definitely, you could feel the energy of everybody there being one. It was hot, humid. Everybody stuck together, and it was a great event in Detroit. And then there was a rally with speeches. UAW President Fain gave a speech as well. Multiple regional directors and civil rights leaders and international staff were there, as well as plenty of UAW members, along with many others. Had a lot of sponsors for the walk, but it was a great experience. And that should be posted all over social media. So if anybody wants to watch it, like I said, I'm an amateur Facebook Live guy, so I tried my best. But it was a great event.
And I appreciate what you did, Jesse. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Me too, cool. Jesse. Thank you.
Okay, guys, we're going to switch gears. Jesse, thank you very much. That's awesome. It really is.
You're welcome.
Let me get Pianki on here. Where did Pianki go? Hold on here, Dad. Get him on. We got so many callers and so many people. Pianki, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, Donnie?
Very good, sir. And,
hey, Pianki.
Area code 55. Is that 225, is that the other person
you need? Mr. Dale, yes. He's going to speak to you about Article 5.
All right.
Hey, Dale Clary.
Mr. Dale, you are on with us? With
yes,
Bianchi.
Sir. How are you?
Very good. Very good. We're here to learn.
Yes, yes.
So tell us about the Article 5 Convention of States.
Thank you, Donnie. I sure will. Bianchi and I are down here in Louisiana, which has been pretty active in the Convention of States movement. But here's what we're doing. Article 5 to the U.S. Constitution allows the states to reel in a runaway federal government. When you have a federal government that has abused its power and extended its power beyond what's actually authorized in the Constitution, the Article 5 to the Constitution provides a procedure for the states to propose amendments to stop the federal government from exceeding its authority. And that's what's going on right now. It's never been done before. But basically what Article 5 says is, the first way to amend the Constitution under Article 5 is the way we've done it for years now, that Congress proposes by two-thirds of its members in each house, proposes an amendment, and then if the Congress proposes an amendment, then it goes out to the states for ratification. And if three-quarters of the states ratify it, then it becomes part of the Constitution. That's been done, ever since we've been a country. But there's another way. There's a second way that allows the states to control the process, where the states say, we're going to have a convention, we're going to propose the amendments, but then once those amendments are proposed, they go back out to the states for ratification, just like the other amendment process. What Convention of States is doing is using that Article 5 to, like I said earlier, reel in a runaway federal government by proposing amendments that might fall into three categories. That once this convention is pulled together and once it happens, there are three types of amendments that can be proposed from this convention. Number one is fiscal restraints, money restraints, some sort of way to restrain the spending that's just going crazy in Congress that puts us and our children and our grandchildren into debt before they're even born. That's number
right.
one is fiscal restraints. Maybe a balanced budget amendment, maybe something else. There's lots of things. Number two is term limits for members of Congress, maybe for federal bureaucratic officials, maybe for members of the Supreme Court and the other members of the court. And term limits is by far the most popular constitutional amendment, according to polls that we've seen, and by far the least popular one among public officials. What a surprise, right? And then the third category is just what they call reducing the power and the jurisdiction of the federal government. And that can cover a whole lot of stuff, and I'm glad to answer some questions to go a little bit further on that. But it's primarily designed at keeping federal bureaucrats from issuing rules and regulations that tell us what to do when these bureaucrats have never been elected and Congress has never given them authority to do some of the things that they're doing. So that's kind of a brief overview of Convention of States. It's the states being allowed by the Constitution to reel in a federal government that's abusing its authority.
Okay. Earlier today, from last night, I got an email from, and I don't know where it is, but I can tell you what was in it. It was from Jackie from Arlington, Texas, a worker, UAW worker. She listens to the show on Sunday night at work. And she wanted to know about term limits and the Department of Education. Where can we get it out of Washington, D.C., and term limits speak for themselves?
Absolutely, those two will be discussed at the convention when it's held. Just from having been involved, I'm a volunteer. I don't get paid to do this. I happen to be a lawyer, but something that I latched into a few years ago and been following all along. But
in talking with the people at the national level and talking with the people at the local level, term limits is, like you said, like she says, is by far one of the most popular things that can be done. You know, that'll be up to the convention. What do they want to propose to the states? Do they want 12 years? Do they want 18 years? Do they want 6 years? There's a lot of people there that think 12 years is probably enough, whether you're a senator or a member of the House. In fact, y'all might be familiar with Mark Levin and his book called The Liberty Amendments, where he actually proposed a number of constitutional amendments, and he proposes 12 years as the limit for the number of years anybody can serve in Congress, so that you're not having people there that have been there for 50 years earning nothing but a congressman's salary, and yet they have five beach houses all around the world. The other thing on education, yes, absolutely, that's going to be discussed, and I highly suspect will be proposed. There's one amendment floating around, and obviously nothing is official until you get to the convention, but one proposed amendment that's been floating around is the federal government shall have no authority to regulate education, including by the use of federal funds. And that clearly is something that, in the judgment of many, Congress has no authority to regulate education, and yet they are doing that every day. And that would be a wonderful one. Yeah, and I suspect that one will be heavily discussed. The question is, you know, will three-quarters of the states pass that? And again, remember what we were talking about earlier. Once once the convention proposes an amendment, it still doesn't become law. It doesn't become part of the Constitution until it goes out for ratification and three-quarters of the states ratify it.
Now, how many states signed up for this right now?
Right, good question. It takes 34 states to pass the same resolution in order for the convention to be held. So far, convention of states is at 19 states and counting. It was active in approximately 20 states this legislative session. None got passed this year, and there's still a few states are still going. But in those states where they didn't pass, like Montana, they missed it by one vote. So we would have had 20 then. There are some other states like Wyoming where we would think that we would be able to get this passed eventually. We just haven't gotten it there yet. And there's a number of other states where in previous years, they didn't even get out of committee. And, well, now they're getting out of committee, and then they got onto the House floor, the Senate floor, and maybe they didn't pass in those particular chambers. But I think what's going on, Donnie, is kind of like what you guys here on the phone call are doing. People are finding out about this, finding out about convention of states, finding out that, hey, we can actually do this, where we, the people, actually step in and tell the federal government what they can and cannot do. This is amazing. So let's take a look at it. So there's still a lot of education going on and still a lot of learning, but we're up now to 19 states. And so we expect to be getting some more states in the next year or two.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Adrian.
About since this is a convention, do you have delegates, and how are the delegates selected?
That's also an excellent question, because some people get worried about that. Louisiana has passed a resolution that's actually being used as a model resolution for other states. But generally, the way the procedure will be is that the legislature of your state will select who's going to go, and then they will authorize them. That is, they'll establish some way of credentialing these people, giving them the authority to go speak for your state when they go to the convention. Then they will instruct them and they will tell them, here's what you can do and here's what you cannot do. And oh, by the way, if you do anything outside the realm of your instructions, your vote will have no meaning whatsoever. You're not authorized to speak for Louisiana, for example, if you do that. And then the last one is they will also supervise them. I mean, with cell phones and video and I mean, remember, this is going to be the most watched political event in the history of our country when this convention actually goes. So anybody back in the legislature, back in your home, in their home state, is going to be watching and seeing what's going on at the convention. So the legislature will be able to select, authorize, instruct, and supervise whoever's going to go to the convention. So, you know, if, for example, if I'm a delegate and I go to the convention and I start doing stuff that the legislature said I couldn't do, they're gonna yank my credentials and send me home and make me pay my own make me pay my own ticket to get home. Some states, like I believe Georgia, has made it a crime to exceed the authority that's given to you by the legislature. We didn't go that far in Louisiana, but I know that I believe Tennessee may have also.
Yeah, wow.
You know, another thing you might want to mention too, Bill, is that each state only has one vote. So whatever wrangling,
yeah,
wrestling, and fist fight that goes among the delegates, a state can send 1,000 delegates if they want, but each state only has one vote.
Right, and that's absolutely true. Now, we haven't had any conventions of states in many years. There actually were a lot of them back then. In fact, that's how our original Constitution got started, was by a meeting of the states, which put together the Constitution. And there were some others after that, but it's something that we're not used to anymore. But historically, and there have been some really good research done and some books written by some people who know a lot more about this stuff, that historically, because we are states, the states established the federal government, and the states are the actual sovereign entities within the United States, that they have the authority to vote, that each state at the convention will have one vote. Even though you may have five delegates, and Louisiana is going to have five delegates and then three alternate delegates, and I'll tell you about who can be the delegates and who can't be the delegates in a minute, but those delegates will have to confer. They have to talk. They sit down and say, how are we going to vote on this particular proposed amendment and reach some agreement on it? And, in fact, the reason we have five delegates from Louisiana is so there will never be a tie. And you're going to have a 3-2 vote sometime. You may have some disagreement. I suspect there will be a lot of agreement, but it's one state, one vote, and whatever delegates representing whatever state will have to decide how their state is going to vote. So it's not going to be like, you know, the political party conventions, the Democrat convention and the Republican convention that we see on TV. Like Pianchi says, it's one state, one vote.
One other question. Suppose the president say he don't want this to happen. Congress, either
the
Senate,
president has no authority
or
to stop it.
How about the Supreme Court? Can they stop it?
No, they really don't have it. The Supreme Court has looked at a little bit in conventions, amendment conventions, but keep in mind we haven't had a state amendments convention in a long, long time. But the Supreme Court has already acknowledged it a little bit. But the Supreme Court would have to have some legal authority that would give them the authority to stop the convention, and there is none because the Constitution is very clear that the states have the authority to have this convention to propose those amendments. It's
and
a
I
natural
think wording,
impulse to say, will the Supreme Court stop it? Will the president stop it? That's why we're doing this, because we've seen it happen over and over where the courts or the president or the Congress have exceeded their authority.
Yeah, so Congress can't stop it. The president can't stop it. The Supreme Court can't stop it. Matter of fact, the wording says that Congress shall provide a place for the convention to be held. So
that gives a lot of power
to the people.
Exactly. And shall is a great big legal term that they teach every freshman in law school and every school across the country. That means that Congress has no judgment. They can't change it. It's what they shall do. And what Pianchi is referring to is once 34 states have passed this resolution calling for the convention, Congress shall do it. And frankly, if they don't do it, the states will do it themselves without Congress.
All right. Any more questions? This is very interesting. Very interesting.
Actually, I had a question similar to the Supreme Court Justice question to touch on that a little bit. I'm glad somebody else asked. But that's considered the supreme law of the land. They are federally appointed, but at the same time, they're also the Supreme Court to interpret the Constitution, which means if there's amendments made, can't they block those amendments from being put into the Constitution based on interpretation of those then becoming the Constitution? And for me, I would be concerned if they can do that because, again, they're federally appointed by the President of the United States, which is party-specific from one president to the next.
The Supreme Court technically has no legal authority to stop the convention or to refuse to allow the amendments to go forward if the states follow the procedures that are outlined in Article 5. That is, once 34 states call for the convention is held and amendments are proposed, and those amendments, proposed amendments are ratified by 38 states, the Supreme Court has no legal authority to stop it.
One other thing, too. He may mention that the Supreme Court interprets the Constitution. No, the Supreme Court does not interpret the Constitution. What the Supreme Court does is that they listen to arguments between one or two parties, and they also look at a law that was passed probably by the state legislature. Then they see if that law is constitutional or not. The United States Constitution is what lets the Supreme Court exist. What we're talking about is trying to say that a baby gives birth to his mother, and that's just not possible.
The Supreme Court does have authority to
interpret the Constitution. That is, if there's some ambiguity in the wording of the Constitution and some question as to what it means in a certain area, the Supreme Court does have the authority to, like you say, listen to both parties, let everybody argue about what it means, and then give some interpretation in a specified case if there's a particular dispute before them that requires an interpretation of the Constitution. But what the Supreme Court does not have is the authority to amend the Constitution. The amendment is strictly given only to either Congress, the way it's been done, or the states, the way it's going to be done under the Convention of States proposal.
I have a question.
Okay, thank you for that.
You said they can't step in and stop it, but what happens if we get a Fauci pandemic? Can they stop it then? Because I don't trust these bastards at all.
And that's a legal term. I don't trust these bastards. That's an embedded legal term. That's why you now have millions and millions of people who are waking up and looking at the Convention of States as a way to reel in a runaway federal government, because it's becoming very, very apparent, regardless of which side of the political aisle you're on, that the federal government is abusing its authority, and they need to be called to the carpet. And this is the legal way, this is the peaceful way to do that.
Thank you, brother. Because at 65, I didn't want to go to prison.
Gene, I think you were trying to get in.
Again, going back to kind of what Jesse was talking about or asking about, just to clarify, so. If the states pass a resolution to add a new amendment to the Constitution, it's my understanding the Constitution is the basis of our laws. And so if the Supreme Court could shoot down, in your quotes, something that was passed by the states, then in turn they would be able to shoot down any laws that the Congress and the Senate pass. Would that be about the same lines of what he was trying to ask?
That's a valid concern, in part because the Supreme Court has been doing some of that. which is this, and this is ultimately the way to correct erroneous Supreme Court decisions, is by passing amendments to the Constitution that basically says, "No, Supreme Court, you're wrong. You can't. We can't do that."
Court is a judge, and they're supposed to interpret the law as written. They're not supposed to write the law from the bench. Is that
absolutely
correct?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct, and that's called the judicial. In the Constitution, it's called the judicial power, and that's the having the power to interpret and apply the law in a given case. It is not to create.
Regardless if they agree with it or not.
Correct.
Regardless if they agree with the law or not.
Correct. But we've all seen the Supreme Court stray off the road into the ditch on some decisions. And that's what got a lot of people concerned.
Along party lines. They vote along party lines as opposed to what the law is written as.
Well, the Supreme Court has been guilty, in my judgment, of substituting their opinions for laws that they don't like. Not all of them, but all it takes is 5 justices out of 9, and they've done that sometimes.
Right.
And that's what has a lot of people concerned, but that's also why a lot of people are saying, well, we've got to do this convention thing in order to stop that, in order to slow it down.
Can I ask another question?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, by the way, for coming on the program and answering our questions and giving us some education. But overtime, I got to work overtime. But no, really, so when you say that each state has to pass a vote to join this convention, and right now we're only at 19, which is a long ways away, but closer towards that 34 states needed. How does each state go about that? Because this is honestly the first I've heard of this, so I'm grateful that you're on the program, but I'm guessing that Michigan's not one that's bought into it because I haven't seen any information or been allowed to vote. So who votes for this in each state?
The legislatures pass a resolution to vote for it. It's not a bill. It's a resolution that is passed in each state by the legislature. Michigan has not had it passed in Michigan yet. I'm looking at a progress map and checking to see. There was something, I believe, filed. No, it was not filed in Michigan this year. It may have been filed previously, but not in 2023. But, I mean, what it takes is people to start calling their legislators and say, hey, talk to me. You know, what do you know about this Convention of States thing? We have a sample resolution that's on the Convention of States website. They don't have to write the resolution. And it'll say something as basic and simple, because we've done it here in Louisiana. You can find it on the Internet at conventionofstates.com. There is a sample resolution that'll say something to the effect of, you know, we, the legislature of Michigan, hereby call on Congress to call a convention for the purpose of imposing term limits on federal officials, providing fiscal restraint on the spending of the federal government, and to reduce the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. Boom. That's it. And then it goes into the normal legislative process. It'll be introduced. Once a legislator introduces it as a bill, as a resolution, then it goes to the committees, whatever committee it would be assigned to in Michigan. And then if the committee members look at it and they vote it out, it goes out onto the floor. And then let's say it started in the House, let's go to the House of Michigan. And if the House of Michigan passes it, then it goes over to the Senate, just like a bill. And then the Senate goes through the same process. So there's a lot of people who just, like you said just a minute ago, they just don't know about it, haven't heard anything about it. But the word is spreading, and it's getting out there.
You know, one other thing, if I may add, that's where the people themselves get involved, is with your individual legislature. And actually, within any congressional district, you may have at least 3 legislatures, maybe 2, and they can call that congressperson to the floor. But you know, there's another good thing to being a member of the Convention of State. because they have an arm to let people, its members, know about legislation that's coming down through your state legislature, where you can contact your your legislature for the state or your state senators and say that I'm for this bill or I want to override the veto that the governor is imposing. And that's a great thing because I've been involved in doing that myself. Can you explain that a little bit more too, Dale?
Yeah, Pianchi. I mean, because Pianchi has been very active in the legislature here in Louisiana. Here's the deal. If you go to conventionofstates.com and click on it and sign the petition, just meaning, I want to know more about this or I'm involved in this, I'm in support of this, we need to relearn a runaway federal government. It's not going to cost you any money. Nobody's going to show up at your door and do anything. You can even click that I don't send me any emails, but I would think you might want to get some emails just to find out more because they get some regular reports on all of this. But what happens is your name goes into a list of, and we've got over almost 3 million petition signers now in the United States. But that enables you and anybody else in your House, for example, your House of Representative district, this is at the state level, or your Senate district at the state level, they can send a list to that senator and say, we've got hundreds of people in your district who have signed the petition for convention of states. That makes them listen. For example, as Pianchi was saying, we're doing, because we've already passed the resolution in Louisiana, we've already passed the commissioner selection resolution in Louisiana, what we're doing now is we're looking for other bills in the legislature that we feel are consistent with what we call self-governance principles. And that's really what all this is about. We're trying to get us to be able to govern ourselves, not to have God Almighty in Washington, D.C. handing down edicts to us. So it becomes it's back to we the people. We're telling our legislators, we're urging our legislators what to do. And as Pianchi says, we've been so active in some particular bills in Louisiana, we've got legislators telling us, I've never had anybody contact me as much as this. We like for a couple of bills, we had 400 or 500 people jumping on bills to ask their legislators to pass it. We have in just Louisiana has almost 40,000 people have signed the petition. So we can go to a legislator and say, we got 40,000, we're speaking for 40,000 people in Louisiana, and they will listen. But as Pianchi was saying, we're getting involved in a lot more than simply just this convention and reeling in a runaway federal government.
Let me jump in here real quick. We've got a lot of people in a switchboard, more than I've seen in the world. Push one on your keypad if you'd like to join the conversation. And if you have questions, please blurt it out. Dale will answer or Pianchi. Go ahead.
Actually, to better clarify this, there's some issues that COS can't get involved in as an organization. But you being a citizen of the state, they would inform you and say, hey, look, we got this issue that's coming down that we want to stop them from doing this, that, and the other to kids that we want to have, and God we trust on buildings, and, things like that. And a lot of people, they really adhere to that. So the ability to contact you and text you over your phone or email and say these bills are coming down, take a look at them, and here's your representative, call them up and give them your opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, keep in mind, in most states, your legislator is, they have a day job. I mean, in most states, it's not like Congress where that's their job. They may be grocery store owners, they may be lawyers, they may run a daycare, or who knows, but or they may have just another kind of business, but they have a day job, and you'll see them at the grocery store. You may see them at schools or in other community events, and you have a much greater likelihood that if you send an email or make a phone call to your local legislator, you got a much greater likelihood that they're going to respond to you than somebody from Congress. And that's not knocking some people from Congress. Well, we have some good congressmen, I think. But
they've
got hundreds of thousands of people.
I don't know how it works in Louisiana, but up here in Michigan, they don't have no day jobs. Sorry to say.
We have a full-time state Congress that might work part-time.
There you go. That's their part-time job, right.
Well, but still, their numbers are much smaller than the numbers you would have for a congressman or a senator. I mean, how many million people do you have in Michigan these days?
I have no idea. We have to call down to Florida to find out.
Half of them are going down there, right?
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, the point is that a congressman or a senator, U.S. senator, has a lot more people trying to reach them, and you're just not going to get the responsiveness that you would from a local legislator.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
and
you know,
I put the email address on the description page, folks, if you just go to that. And you can even sign up right there, and you can listen to Mark Levin explain his thoughts on the Convention of States. And I signed up, and I even contributed. So get involved. Let's get this going in Michigan. And wherever you are, Indiana, I see Indiana, and I know Texas is listening. Thank you very much down there in Texas for all the people listening on the line working. Yes, sir.
Donnie, you know, you and I was talking last night about those that are opposed to this.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What they're doing, they're saying that you as a U.S. citizen have no right to utilize what the Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution guarantees you. Now, what particular organization did we see that we commented on in Michigan?
Go ahead, Bianchi. You know more.
I think it
about
was the AFL-CIO was against it.
I believe that was the organization, yes. Well, and I don't know why.
But in every state where they exist, they are. You got George Soros, he's against it. And you got the teachers' unions, the NEA, they're against it. Planned Parenthood, they're against it. NAACP, they're against it. You kind of getting the picture there, fellas.
Yeah. Nobody wants you to do it. And the only thing missing on the list is can we get George Soros out of America? That's one thing we need to have on this convention. Oh, man. I would like that. I enjoy listening to this because I've heard of this, but I never even looked into it. Thanks to Bianchi, who's teaching us about this every Saturday night. And I appreciate that.
I have one more question, Don, if it's okay.
No, please. Yeah, fine. All the questions
are
welcome.
Well, just one more question that I had thought about. So you said that 19 states out of 34 that's needed are already on board. Out of those 19 states, and you said the legislature of each state is who votes to determine if they want to be a part of the Convention of States. So having said that, have you noticed with the states that have joined already, is this bipartisan effort and bipartisan involvement, or is this one party versus another to address this?
There's a little bit of both. I can answer that in two ways, because so part of it's bipartisan, and frankly, part of it is more conservative-driven. You might remember a senator by the name of Tom Coburn, who died a couple of years ago from Nebraska. He wrote a book called The Debt Bomb, and that was, I'm going to say, about 5 to 10 years ago, basically saying that all of what we're doing right here with the spending that we're doing that's driving up inflation, that's costing us all a lot of money, that has no political party to it. And I think that and term limits are the two things that people on both sides of the or if there's three sides, all sides of the political aisles can agree on. But having said that, the states that have passed it are concentrated in the South, but not exclusively in the South. Alaska has also passed it, North Dakota, Wisconsin, Indiana, West Virginia. It has not passed up in the Northeast. I'm just being honest with you. It's more difficult up there. There's some a lot of folks who just aren't interested in this kind of thing. It has not passed in California or Oregon or Washington, although it was active in Washington this year. There are a lot of people who just don't know what this is about, and they haven't asked the questions like you folks are asking on the phone tonight. But we run into a lot of people who say, at first I was opposed to this, but the more I looked at it, the more I realized this is absolutely what we've got to do.
You know, Tom Corbin, you guys might remember at the end of the year, fiscal year, he would get up in the Senate and talk about all the waste, you know, tell you all the wasteful spending that
right.
our government does. And it was fascinating, especially when he got to the shrimp on a hamster wheel. That was amazing. I think that was about $500,000. Just pissing our money away on just BS, and we know that. Jesse, I don't know if that answered your question or not.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. The longer we're on here, I start thinking of more questions. another question I have, though, being that I'm in a state that has not bought into the joining that convention of states, can any U.S. citizen, say you're in Louisiana and your state's already passed, can a citizen from Michigan or from another state that hasn't joined the convention of states, can they send a proposal as a citizen somewhere that could potentially be looked at and adopted to be a proposal?
No, because the Constitution specifically says the legislatures of the states have to be the one that does the resolutions. But what you can do, if you're in a state that's not passed the Convention of States resolution, is go to your legislator. Go to your House member or your Senate member and say, look, I want you to take a look at this. What do you think about this? Are you interested? And just start talking to them. What we found out is they actually, for the most part, maybe not in Michigan, I don't know, but for the most part in Louisiana, they like talking to their constituents, because usually the only thing they hear from constituents is griping and bitching because the roads are broken and they got potholes and this, that, and the other. But when somebody comes to the legislator and says, hey, I think this is a great idea, I'd like to propose it to you, and here it is in writing, what do you think? Let's talk about it. I'll come over 15 minutes, we'll have a cup of coffee and chit-chat. They love that. They don't have people coming to do that with them. And that would be true. I suspect that's true in most states. So, no.
Okay.
Can you do it directly? No. Well, there's no referendum or initiative process for here. This, it's actually got to go through the legislature. But that's the cool thing. It gives you an opportunity to go talk with your legislator.
And, you know, another thing about that with the legislature, you know, legislatures only last so long. And then you're dealing with a whole other person, and they may come in with a different attitude. But there's opposition. Right. There's opposition out there that goes to legislators and try to get them to rescind their votes. And you would be surprised. And this is not about politics. This is about the United States. I'm doing this voluntarily because I love the United States, and I like to see that my grandchildren be able to experience what I have experienced with what the U.S. has offered and provided me, the liberties and so on and so on. And when I look at it, I don't like what I see coming down the pipe. I really don't. And I think it needs to be changed. And Congress is never going to voluntarily do this on their own. Can you blame them?
Right, they got a sweet deal. I mean, they lifetime benefits, people showering them with money once they get in there because they've got so much power to be able to control so many things. But what Pianchi says is true, I think, for just about everybody who's involved in the Convention of States. If you ask them, why are you doing this? You're not getting paid to do this. Why are you doing this? Because I love my family. I love my country. This is the best country on the planet, and it's in jeopardy right now. And this is the peaceful way to rebuild. I'm not going to say make America great again because that's too political, but to bring America back to the strength and the beauty that it should be.
Fair enough.
Right.
So how long has this been going on from the start of, say, the first state voting and passing to going to this up to current now? When did this start, and do you see it coming to fruition, say, within the next 5 years where we have enough states to have this convention take place?
I think it may actually go maybe 3 or 4 years. But, yeah, within a five-year window, I do see it coming. The first state actually passed in 2014. Georgia was the first state. It really just got off the ground in 2014. Just by coincidence, Mark Levin wrote his book called The Liberty Amendments about the same time. And at the same time, Mark Meckler Michael Ferris got together and started the Convention of States Project, and so it kind of all came together from different directions at about the same time in about 2013. So in historical terms, it really hasn't been going all that long. Keep in mind, during 2020 and 2021, the legislatures didn't want to look at anything like this. They were so obsessed with, and rightfully so, they were so obsessed with COVID, they didn't want to touch anything like this. And so we had kind of a two-year hiatus where not a whole lot happened during those 2 years. But then once that passed, once that period, that time period passed, for example, in 2022, we had four states come on board, Wisconsin, Nebraska, West Virginia, and South Carolina. And again, there are a number of states that came really close this year, and I suspect are going to get over the hump here in the next year. So I'm expecting that within the next 5 years, we're going to have this done. Again, in historical terms, that's not that long of a period of time.
And if you sign up and you choose to get more involved, there's people there in your state that will contact you. We in a different state. But there's people there in your state that will contact you and show you how, walk you side by side to show you how to get better involved. You know what I do in the course of a day's time? I carry these little sheets of paper around with me, or a banner, and I see somebody on the street, I stop them, and I hand them that sheet of paper and tell them, would you go to this website and get involved? It's just as simple as that. Also, I call, when somebody sign up, I do the follow-up. I'm a volunteer for the follow-up. There's many. And I call a new person who's just signed a petition and congratulate them and thank you, real short. And at the end, I say, God bless you. So it's just that simple.
There are organizations in every state. It is very tightly pulled together with a lot of computer analytics, a lot of technical support from the national level, and even legal support from the national level. So it is a strong organization. Well organized, and yet at the same time understanding they're not dictatorial. They know that this has got to be done at the grassroots level. But it can't be done without people like Pianchi just knocking on doors, talking to people, and talking to their friends, talking to their neighbors, and making things happen. That's how this is going to work. It's not going to work because some guy in Atlanta or Baton Rouge or Washington, D.C. is trying to push this along. It's only going to happen if we the people do it.
Hey,
are Pianchi, either of you able to – go ahead, Don. Sorry.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, too, for the resolutions and stuff. So with the 19 states that exist now, is it – my understanding is that they actually are states that have resolutions ready to go or not? And can you guys share, since you're in Louisiana, can you share any – potential resolutions outside of those three topics that you mentioned that might come on the table in a convention as far as the limits for government?
Yeah, you're talking about the particular amendments. The resolution is what the legislature passes to call for the convention. And then once at the convention, you have these particular amendments that would be proposed. There are lots of possible amendments that would fit within those three categories that we talked about earlier. One I will tell you that's real popular among a lot of Convention of States folks is repealing the 17th Amendment. And most lawyers go, what the heck is the 17th Amendment? I didn't even know there was one. When our country started, originally the U.S. senators were chosen by the state legislatures, meaning the state legislatures had direct access to the U.S. senators to tell them what to do and what not to do. In the early 1900s, I'm not going to say why they did this, but they repealed, they changed that. They said, okay, we're going to go to direct elections, just like we're doing. So now we have the House of Representatives elected by the people and the U.S. senators elected by the people. Well, what you did there was you made sure the state legislatures had no control over Congress. And there are a lot of people who think that began the slide into what we have now, where Congress thinks it's supposed to control everything, even though that's not what the Constitution says. So that's one that's very popular among a lot of COS folks. I'll tell you what's not popular among COS folks and will not make it to the floor of the convention. That's anything affecting the Second Amendment and anything affecting the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, which is the right to vote, the prohibition against slavery, and the prohibition against immunity, privileges and immunities of being a citizen of the United States. Those are going to be untouchable.
Here's one I'd like to put in would be if you come to our country to have your baby, that doesn't make that baby an American citizen.
And I think that would probably fall within the call, yeah.
Yeah, and really if they read that the right way, that the sentiment is under the jurisdiction of the United States. So if she had a baby here, that baby is a citizen. But people that's coming from other countries are under the jurisdiction of where they come from. So it's a lot of things that is being used wrong. And the states actually give the federal government power. And if you read the Constitution, the power of the federal government comes from the states. I mean, let's read it. But the states just won't take that power for some reason or another. And I think it's because that the people don't know. I think that comes from the educational system. Somebody talked about the Department of Education and what it has on you. So it just has to change. It's just wrong the way it is. It's just totally wrong.
Well, but Bianchi, we're educating them now, just doing stuff like this tonight. We're explaining to a lot of people who've never heard of this before, and they're picking it up and they're understanding it.
Yeah.
Any other questions, Donnie? What else? What else?
What else we got out there? Jesse, what did you think of us?
Oh, well, I was going to ask. somebody else has a question.
Whatever you did, Mikhail, you fucked me up.
I wanted to know how did you come? How did they come up with 34 states?
Back to the talk show.
Oh, okay.
I didn't hear that question.
How did they come up with 34 states?
That's actually in the Constitution. It says two-thirds of the states will be required to propose to call the convention.
Thank you.
That's in Article 5. And it's also in Article 5 is that three-quarters of the states, that's 38, have to approve any amendment that comes out of there. So that's straight out of Article 5. I mean, if you really want to look up Article 5, it's not very long. You just get on the Internet and look up Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. And it's only one long paragraph.
Thank you.
Okay, Jesse.
For the limits of power for the federal government, is there any amendment that you know that would be proposed at this point within the 19 states that are willing to join this convention of states, an amendment to limit the ability to vote on decisions within, say, Congress to do through a lame duck session before a new Congress comes in?
I have not heard anybody talking about that particular proposal, But that's certainly, if you look at the three areas, fiscal restraint, term limits, and reducing the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, that would be one that would fall within reducing the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, I would think, because you're saying that you no longer have the power to do anything when you're in a lame duck session, like they seem to be prone to do, like they did last year.
Right.
There are a number of, like, the Mark Levin Liberty Amendments that he's proposed have some interesting proposals where states can jump in and nullify federal law, is one of his proposals. If you get enough, I think it has 60% or 30 states would have the amendment, have the ability to nullify a state, let me start over. 60% or 30 states would have the legal authority under his proposed amendment to nullify a federal law that's enacted by Congress. Where, you know, not suddenly it's, you've got the direct ability, the state has the direct ability to nullify federal law. We don't have that right now. Now the only way you can do it is to go through this cumbersome amendment process that we're working on.
Right.
I think that's a good one.
At the end of this, I will play Mark Levin's Our Constitution Will Save Us, Not Congress. I'll play that for everybody. If you go to conventionofstates.com, you can also listen to it. But go ahead, Jess. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I appreciate all the answers to all the questions, and I was hoping other people had questions, too. I know Adrian had a question. You had a question. Jimmy had a question. But I was hoping other people had questions.
I think you asked most of the questions that people wanted to know. And I think
go to conventionofstates.com, sign the petition, click on it. It won't cost you any money. Nobody's going to show up at your door. You don't have to do anything beyond that. But you can learn a lot about what's going on. You can even go to YouTube and hunt for Convention of States. And as a whole, if you like listening to videos, there's a whole lot of short videos. It just gives you little snips of information about various topics. And they're well done, and there's lots of them. So there's lots of resources out there to go look all this up and get educated with it.
Yeah, and every time you do one of those video courses, you can download your certificate and hang it on the wall. It's about 20 of them.
Yeah, you can.
Interesting. Thank you.
Somebody. Yeah, there's a lot of YouTube videos.
Bianca, you said that you were a lawyer early on when you came on. Just for my knowledge and knowing about you being a lawyer, what type of practice do you do? Is it constitutional law or what? Because you said that you're doing this voluntarily, and so did the other gentleman that's on, and you seem to know very well about the Constitution.
Well, my career—it's become a hobby for me. My career has not historically been constitutional law, but I have been studying and writing about this for a good 15 years. I do now have some constitutional law practice, including particularly election law, but historically my career has actually been construction litigation, typically representing architects and engineers in heavy litigation over all kind of really interesting things. But as a lawyer, it's still the same. That is, you're reading what the law is and you're trying to apply it to a particular given fact situation. And frankly, the Constitution is really, I hate to say, simple. It is simple. It's a very small document. If you ever get a pocket version of it, there's not a whole lot to it. What we've done, I say we, what our courts have done and what our federal government has done is just blown it up into more and more and more and more interpretation, which ends up eventually becoming amendments. So I've really had the joy and the pleasure of doing a lot of reading and doing a lot of looking and studying about the Constitution. And there is, like I said, there's plenty of information out there. It's just become a passion of mine.
And I can tell you that he's a very good teacher. I've learned a lot from him, listening on Saturday nights and being involved on Saturday. And Bianchi is also quite informative. Now, he can get...
Yeah, you know, that's how I got involved. It was my parents. Then, of course, I'd done my children, the nieces and nephews, my grandson. I made them learn the documents, the founding documents of this country. I made them view the wars, study the wars, the generals in all the wars. And, you know, one of my favorites is George S. Patton. But that's what you have to do. You've got to teach your young people because they won't get it in school. And then when they get to the point where they're adults, then you sit back and wonder why come they're making the decisions that they're making. You know, it's just like Donnie's show. I was just walking by, he left the door open, I walked in, there was Gene, Donnie, and I just fell right in place.
Been there ever since, and I appreciate it. I do appreciate it.
Well, Donnie, this is Dale. I appreciate you having me on. If y'all don't mind, I'm going to drop off. I'll be glad to come back another time if anybody has some more questions or Bianchi knows how to get a hold of me. Bianchi is a great teacher himself in all of this. He's been a real big help and a big inspiration to us in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah. He's a good teacher. Some of us don't. Dale, I want to thank you very much being here. And you were a very good teacher. And I learned a lot. People go to conventionestate.com. I'm going to play Mark Levin right now for everybody. And have a good night, because after this, we'll just shut her down. I'm going to Lori Ann's show, Lucid Libertarian, on Blog Talk Radio. As soon as it wants to play, it'll play.
Thank you. Good night.
Here we go. Here we go.
Good night.
No, hell it
is. Good night. Thank you.
Good night, everybody. I'm just going to shut it down. Nothing's playing. Everything blew up on me again tonight. Everybody have a great night. We'll see you next Sunday night at 7 Eastern Standard Time. You want to join us on Saturday night, it's Beyond the Mainstream, same number. Give us a call and join the conversation. Good night. Thanks, Bianchi. Thank you, Dale. Thank you, Adrian and Gene and whoever else. Jesse, for sure. Thank you for asking questions that we all wanted to know about. You and Adrian, I appreciate it. Have a great night. Good night.
Good night.